Zorba Pastor on your health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba through the hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. You have a question for Zorba? Then give us a call now at 1-800-462-7413. You'll find a line open right now. Some interesting research to talk about this hour, Zorba.
Yes. Does sex sell soap? That's the question. In other words, if you put a sexy woman in front of a soap commercial for guys, do they end up buying soap and other things like cars and TVs? Interesting research that comes out of all places, Belgium.
Oh, okay. What else?
And we're going to talk about tuberculosis. Very important issues with MDR, multi-drug-resistant TB, a new test that's coming out. It really has the blessing of the WHO. TB is much more common than people think, especially among people with HIV/AIDS. Great, important new research.
Mm-hmm. And a recipe from a nurse.
This one is dynamite. Yes, one of my nurses, Mary's Bean Salsa. I've had it. I've tasted it. I think it's delicious. I said, Mary, you've got to be on the show with us to talk about it, and she will.
Coming up soon, we have our medical myth buster as well later in the hour, so you're going to want to stay tuned here to Zorba Pastor on your health. To the phones we go, Zorba, and our first caller with us in Long Island, New York. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, how can we help you?
Thank you for taking my call. Love the program.
Thanks.
Thank you.
My question today pertains to these airborne pills that are marketed as anti-cold, anti-flu pills that one supposedly takes during an airplane flight. And I was just wondering, my family and I are traveling in the near future. I wanted to know if they really work, and if they don't, are they harmful, or are they just simply a waste of money?
So these are pills that that keep you from getting sick on the plane, is that it?
Well, that's what I hear, and I wanted to possibly Dr. Zorba could shed some light.
You know about these, Zorba?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There's not just one kind of pill. There's several kinds of pills. And generally, the pills are vitamins. They often contain vitamins. They often contain zinc. The idea is let's give you something to boost your immune system in case you're sitting next to somebody who's Mr. Snuffleup, I guess, you know, has got, you know, kind of mucus coming out and cough. And, you know, because that's a big issue. You know, the quality of air is an issue on airplanes and then sitting next to somebody who is ill. So a question. You said you're traveling. Where's your family traveling to?
Well, we're traveling from New York, Long Island, to San Francisco for a vacation. And my wife is in the middle of a cold. My son is coming out of a cold. And I was wondering if it's worthwhile all of us to take these pills and whether they prevent a cold during an airplane flight or possibly help relieve a cold sooner than later when one does have a cold.
You know, it's interesting. You're the people we want to put in the back of the plane and wrap up so that you don't give it to other people on the plane. But let me tell you how these things are spread. Generally, germs are spread when somebody sneezes in your face. So it's an issue. You know, if you're really close to somebody when they sneeze, that's the one thing that tends to spread it. The other thing that spreads it is on your hands. You touch your hands, you touch somebody else, they've got a virus. You've got a virus or bacteria on your hands. You scratch your nose or you touch your eye, the mucous membranes, or put your hand in your mouth, and that's a common way that these things are spread. So on the whole, these pills really don't do anything, but hand washing and bringing hand sanitizers really will do a lot. And if you've got a cold on the airplane, I like what the Japanese do. They wear these little masks. They're almost like surgical masks on their face. And basically, it keeps you away from you know, spreading it to other people. The problem is, of course, once you wear a mask like that, people will look at you and think you have tuberculosis or something like that. It's not culturally appreciated.
Just so we know the bottom line here, there's nothing you can take that's going to keep you from getting getting a cold.
Not at all. The only thing you can do is basically keep yourself from really coming into contact with somebody who has a cold. But there is something else. When your body mounts a response to a cold or a sore throat, on the whole, you will do a better job at fighting other viral infections. You don't do a worse job, as people think. You actually do a better job because your body is already mounting a response. So the fact that you're just getting over a cold, your wife, your children, and everything else actually reduces the chances that this will happen. The other issue is you're on an airplane, hydrate yourself. It's a big issue. People do not hydrate themselves on an airplane. They especially don't because they just don't have the normal things that they think about that remind them they should drink, and that's what you should do.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the information. That's very helpful.
You're welcome. Enjoy your trip with your family. It doesn't last forever. Have a great time.
Thank you. Thank you both so much.
Sure.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener, joins in now in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Well, hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
I was in a discussion with a friend of mine who is very much into nutrition and taking supplements and promotes it. And I needed the preeminent opinion about the difference between taking calcium carbonate and calcium citrate.
The answer is zero. There is no difference between calcium carbonate and calcium citrate.
No.
But the difference can be in the side effects. Some people say calcium carbonate constipates them and causes bloating, and calcium citrate does not constipate them and cause bloating. So there really is no difference.
What are the difference? What does that mean?
Well, it's the salt. It's the salt of which is sort of an term, chemistry term, it's the way the calcium is bound to the other molecule. Calcium is a positive charge and the other molecule is a negative charge, and they're neutral when you take them. So they're just they're sort of different kinds of chalk, I guess you could say, because that's what calcium is. Calcium is chalk.
Being an educator, I could save a lot of money just by breathing in or eating what's around the chalk
tray. That's exactly right. You could just breathe in. That's exactly it. However, chalk in the lungs may not be very healthy, but that's right. Just take those chalk things and just chew on them, and that'll do a good job. That would be kind of yucky. A question. You're taking this. Do you have osteoporosis, or you're worried about osteoporosis?
I do not have osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. It's one of those regimens that gets recommended, you know, where you take the baby aspirin and the multiple vitamin and the vitamin C and a calcium pill, and I floss every day, and if I could just exercise as well as I take all my nutrients, I'd be in great
shape. Wouldn't that be nice if you said, gee, I can't wait to exercise. I've got to get out and do that. That's about 5 to 10% of the population. 90% of us go, gee, I can't wait to get something to eat.
But now
she
ran through the vitamins and supplements, Zorba, left off D. Isn't D an important one,
right,
too?
And actually, you bring up a really good point. Vitamin D, we are vitamin D deficient. We are vitamin D deficient in the wintertime, and basically many of us as adults are vitamin D deficient in the summertime because we wear sunscreen. We don't go out and get 20 minutes of sun, and you can't get it through milk. And the studies show maybe one-third of the population has a vitamin D deficiency. Recent research shows that vitamin D may reduce cancer risk by between 10% and 20%, maybe even more. I now am recommending vitamin D to everybody. It should be vitamin D3, as in the number 3. It's 1,000 units a day. It's not harmful. It's useful. Put that in your regime, and that will work too.
And back to the calcium, how much should she take?
Well, it depends. About 1,500 milligrams a day is a good choice for calcium.
Okay, so then the vitamin D that is in the calcium tablets and in the multiple vitamins
It's really not enough. The vitamin D that's in calcium tablets generally is about 200 units. So if you take 2 calcium tablets a day, you're getting 400 units. And the idea is that you'll get another 300, 400 units through what you drink. Well, a glass of milk is only 40 units.
Oh,
not very much. You're going to have to drink 4-5 glasses of milk and yogurt in order to be able to get D. Well, those are calories. Now, if it's a low-fat product, dairy product, it's very good. The DASH diet, which shows plentiful dairy and low-fat dairy is what they look at, is useful. But I say to people now, get 1,000 units of D. Forget the D with calcium. Take the calcium separately, the D separately. That's the way to go.
Okay. So between carbonate and citrate, no difference.
Difference at all.
All right. Well, I will let him know because he's he feels he's the expert, and he's not. You are.
There you go.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413 to our first bit of research here, Zorba, and interesting research, I think, from some foreign land.
It's from Belgium. Belgium, yeah, maker of the Belgian waffle and drinkers of beer. Have you been to Belgium, by the way?
No, I never have.
It's a wonderful country.
There are a whole lot of places I've never been.
It's one of those wonderful countries you should go to. And my favorite thing in Belgium are literally the waffles that you buy in the street, and you have a little bit of like sugar on them or Nutella. Oh, delicious.
So what's this research that tells us that bikinis make us stupid?
Very, very interesting. That's exactly it. So so these are Belgium young guys, you know, 358 young guys in their 20s. And basically what they did is they wanted to see whether or not they would go after a reward. Okay, so the reward was 15 euros, okay? 20 bucks. We'll give you 20 bucks. The question is, you can get 20 bucks now or you can get 20 bucks later, okay? So that's the question. 20 bucks now, 20 bucks later. But first of all, you've got to watch some things, okay? So they had them watch landscapes. They had them watch a television screen, regular TV. They had them watch girls running across this television screen with bikinis. Then they took another group and they had them handle brassieres. It's a strange study. Then they had them handle T-shirts that were worn by women. And then, after they had it, they just said they weren't telling them what they were doing. Thank you very much for the study. You can either get 20 bucks now or you can get some money later on. It's going to be later on. It's going to be more money. What do you want? In other words, are you going to be impulsive and take the money now, or are you going to wait 2 weeks and we're going to give you more money?
Well, why would anybody not want to take the money? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, the ones who watched the landscape basically said, we'll take the higher reward later. And the
It's more money. Oh,
right.
You didn't say that.
It's more money. And that was part of the study. You didn't tell until the end. The ones who watched the landscape said, we'll take more money. And the ones who watched the girls in bikini or handled women's clothing, undergarments, ears, said, no, we want it now. We want it now. So in other words, what they showed in this particular study was that there's something that's in the brain that basically gets activated. You know, one part of the system, which we call the affective system, is, dude, I'll take whatever it takes. She's hot. I want my money now. And the other side is sort of the deliberative system that says, wait a minute. Did you make an IRA contribution this year? How's your IRA?
Yeah.
And are you looking towards the future?
Yeah.
And lo and behold, sex makes a difference in how you make those decisions. Now, you look at it and you say, well, this makes a lot of sense. On one hand, we know about this. They often put young women in commercials and stuff.
Right.
The issue, though, when it comes to choosing the right healthful thing to do is also an issue. In other words, whether or not you exercise, whether or not you take your medication, whether or not, especially for men, we don't know about for women, whether or not you decide to make the right choice in terms of not speeding, not engaging in aggressive behavior, not engaging in behavior that tends to be high risk that may lead to death or something else, turns out to be a very big issue here in how we as physicians sell the right way to take medication or sell essentially the proper way to stay healthy. And we're not doing that. We do landscapes. That's all we do as doctors. People come into my office and I tell them something. I hand them a sheet of paper. But I don't have the advertising people to hand them a sheet of paper to activate the effective part of their system to make a change in their health habit. Stop smoking. Well, smoking is sexy. Stop smoking is dull. It's contributing to your IRA. So how do we
You should hand them the prescription along with a sexy photo to
maybe. Uh-huh. Maybe that's the answer. That, you know, we laugh, but maybe that's the answer. For a guy, maybe it's you hand it along with a sexy photo and you make non-smoking sexy. Maybe that's the way to drop it. Smoking cigarettes is the leading cause of premature death in America, and men are roughly half the smokers with women, and maybe that's the cue. Maybe that's what's missing in preventive medicine. Sex.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, we appreciate it. What's up?
Well, I was pretty severely injured in a ski accident about 20 years ago.
Ouch.
And suffered a compound fracture, severed the femoral artery, lost both cruciate ligaments, etc. I've been pretty active since I've healed, but I had about 4 surgeries on my left knee. About a year ago, I started to notice, especially when I was flying on the airlines, that when I would sit for long periods of time in the on the airplane, my foot on my bad below my bad knee would swell up and look bruised, just below the ankle bone on the inside of the foot. I noticed a lot of very large puffy veins, and it, you know, I don't know what varicose veins look like, but I started to wonder if I had circulation problems that were related to my knee injury.
Well, first of all, it may be related to the surgeries you have. I mean, that's certainly, you obviously had a disruption, big disruption of your circulation. If you had a femoral artery, you severed the femoral artery. How'd you live? A lot of people who sever the femoral artery die. Someone came in and put a tourniquet on, or what happened?
Yes, I was fortunate. It was very, very cold, and so and I wasn't aware of the bleeding, but I almost bled to death before they found me.
Yeah, that's what happens. I mean, you sever your femoral artery, you die. that's usually what happens also. So you've got two systems. You have the arteries and the nerves, and the veins, rather. You've got the arterial system. You've got the venous system. They're separate. They're really two systems. And you disrupted, obviously, the arterial system. The venous system is different, and varicose veins occur when the valves in the veins, in the venous system, basically become disrupted, usually from injury. Pregnancy will do it. Obesity will do it. And if you've got some varicose veins, some puffy veins around your ankle that are bluish, that's the venous system. Is it related to the injury? Probably, but it's also common. I mean, you don't have to have much of an injury. If you just hit your leg wrong with a valve, it'll do it. The issue is whether or not, you know, what you should do about this. And generally, if they're not symptomatic, we don't do anything about it. In other words, if the veins are just puffy, we don't do anything about it. If they are symptomatic, then you wear a support stocking, and that's what you do. And so if it happens that when you get on the airplane, these things kind of swell up and bother you because you're not walking around, that's what it is. You're sitting there passively. You buy a good support stocking, $25 or $30, or you wrap yourself with an ACE bandage, an elastic bandage, before you go to the airport. And probably 90% of the time, that's good enough. That's all you would do. You can also buy stockings called TEDS, TEDS, like teddy bear. And they're a name brand for a support stocking. They cost about $30. They're really good. And that's kind of what I would do.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're sure. Welcome. You're welcome. One thing that's important, just as a caveat, if you have a black and blue mark on the bottom of your foot and it doesn't go away for a week and it turns yellow, you know how black and blue marks are kind of black and blue and then they turn yellow and then they disappear. That's different. That's due to leakage of blood out of the circulation, and that has to be seen because there's something going on from a traumatic point of view. But puffy veins, they don't bother you. I wouldn't do anything about it. You go on many trips on the airplane? That you often are traveling?
Not too many, but I am pretty active. As long as I stay active, that's it's okay. But then, like you say, when I sit for long periods of time, and especially on the airplane,
and the reason is the arteries have a muscular system on the outside of the artery, and they help regulate the circulation. But the veins, the blood only gets back through the veins by using our external muscles. So people who sit and don't move have puffy legs because they can't get the blood back to the rest of their body, and it kind of tends to pool. And that's what's happening in the airplane. You're an active guy, and you're in the airplane, and you do it. If you get an aisle seat and you walk back and forth once an hour up and down the aisle, you may prevent the whole thing from happening. If it's a window seat, you will disturb the other two people to the other side, and you won't do it. Either that or they'll yell and scream at you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I sure appreciate it.
You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. And before we get to the recipe, Zorba, let's check in on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox to see if we can help out Eric, who appears to be yawnless. He writes, several years ago, I stopped being able to yawn. At times, I feel like yawning and can start, but cannot complete the yawn. I have the urge to yawn when I am tired, but still cannot do so. I asked my doctor why this would happen and was told it was not a necessary biological function, and so it was not looked into any further. What could change in my body that now makes it impossible to yawn? I kind of miss doing it.
Well, my first question is, who wants to yawn? I mean, that's a real question.
Well, I understand that.
You know, who
when
wants
you're tired,
to yawn?
When you're tired, there's a kind of a satisfaction.
In yawning? Yeah, it is kind
of
Or
when you're listening to, you know, a boring doctor program.
There's a satisfaction in yawning. Yeah. Yes, but when you don't want to yawn and you're talking to somebody and you yawn in the middle of a conversation, come on. I mean, that's not socially acceptable, right? I mean, there's the downside of yawning.
It can be a good clue to the other person who's there.
The downside of yawning. Yes. But if they're a higher up and you've got to suppress a yawn, you are in trouble.
So
that's
what's
the downside
on?
Of yawning.
What's going on here?
I have no idea. You know, I mean, he can't yawn. You know what I think it is? It's the coffee he's drinking. It's the caffeine. Or maybe he's taking no-dos or something like that. You know, some people just don't yawn as much as other people. But I've never heard of a non-yawner.
Never.
I've never heard of a
non-yawner. He used to be a yawner. Now he can't.
Yeah, but you know, my guess is there's not a lot of federal money that's really, really going to yawn
research. There's not much research going on.
Nope. And if you can't patent it, what drug company is going to, you know, is going to look at yawning? Here's a pill to help you yawn more. Yeah. I don't think it's going to sell. So you know what? This is one of those questions we can't answer.
Yeah. And hey, you know, there are a lot of really serious things going
That's
on in
right.
this world.
That's right. Don't pay attention to yawning. Come on. Get a life. No. I don't mean that. That would be insulting. We at Public Radio never do that.
So if you can't yawn or have another lifestyle question, we want to hear it. Just send it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Good recipe coming up from someone Zorba knows well. Some more research, too. Also, your phone calls and, by the way, a medical myth buster later on in this hour. Here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, toll free. You have a question for Zorba? We have callers on the line, but a line open for you right now at 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before we get back to the phones, it's recipe time, and we welcome with us on the phone from Poinette, Wisconsin, listener Mary Schmidt. Mary, hi.
Hi.
And Zorba, you know Mary Schmidt.
Oh, yes. I had this recipe when Mary was at our office. It's fabulous. How long have you been making this bean salsa, Mary's bean salsa recipe?
Oh, probably about 2 years.
2 years. How'd you find it?
My cousin actually gave it to me.
Your cousin. So what's your cousin's name?
Jamie.
So it should be Jamie's bean salsa. I mean, Jamie's got to get some credit for this at all. How long has Jamie been making it?
You know, that I don't know, but I had it at a party of hers, and it was very good.
Yeah, I think it's a fabulous
this, we'll do the ingredients. This goes with what? What do you serve with this?
You know, it's like an appetizer, and I serve it with baked tortilla chips.
It's a great idea. So baked tortilla chips, because they have less fat and they have fewer calories. I mean, it's one of those things. Do you get compliments on this whenever you bring it somewhere?
I do.
Yes. I tasted it and I thought, this is so fresh tasting. And what I like about this is that it's inexpensive. It's easy to make. It's something that you can do when you have a dish to pass. And it's not the usual type of sort of fat laden and sour cream and yogurt laden thing that I find I often bring to parties or
taste potato
parties.
Salad. Or,
all of the other stuff, which is good. Okay, so let's go through the recipes. We start out with 1 15-ounce can of pinto beans.
A 15-ounce can of pinto beans.
That's right, pinto beans. What kind? Do you use the pink pinto beans, or what kind do you use?
Yeah, they're pink.
For color, that's one of the things visually that I think I was immediately drawn to when I tried this in the office. Mm-hmm. I thought, wow, this is really good. I really like the color of the pink pinto beans. It's unusual to see pink in a dip recipe. Another 15-ounce can of black beans.
15-ounce can of black beans.
And so you rinse both of these, right?
Correct.
It's important to rinse it because you've got a carbohydrate coating that makes it kind of sticky. And when you rinse it, the bean, I think, really stands out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So a 12-ounce can and 15-ounce cans of shoe-peg corn. What is shoe-peg corn?
Yeah, I think that's pronounced shoe-peg. And it's in the canned vegetable aisle. I hadn't heard of it before either. But they're tiny, light yellow, tender little niblets of corn.
Hmm. Does it taste like corn?
It does, but it's a real mild flavor, but slightly sweet.
And it's smaller, so it'll have more
tiny
crunch versus a larger kernel that may have more mush, whatever you would call it, versus crunch.
That's interesting.
Which is good. One cup of green pepper.
Cup of green pepper, chop them up.
Chopped up. Mm-hmm. How big do you chop them?
Oh, diced, I would say.
Diced. Mm-hmm. Same for the celery, cup of celery. You dice that, too?
And with the peppers, I also add some red and yellow peppers so that it just adds to the color of the whole thing.
Oh, right. The color is, color being the cue. Half cup of chopped onion.
Half cup of chopped onion.
What onion? Use a Vidalia or use a red onion? Or?
You can use either. I've done both.
Uh-huh. I used to use Bermuda onions, but I went to Bermuda the other year for a meeting, and they stopped growing onions on Bermuda. That's where they came from. They came from Bermuda because the land became too expensive, and they're growing condos instead of onions. Still, and Bermuda, by the way, is still owned by England. I know, Tom, there was a question that you had for me.
Who owns Bermuda? That
yes, that's right. Okay, small jar of pimentos.
Small jar of pimentos.
And then I've got any jalapenos. Do you add jalapenos?
I do, but, you know, I don't like things real spicy, mm-hmm. so that's one thing that you can adjust for your taste.
How about Jamie? Does Jamie add jalapenos?
I think she likes it spicy. Yeah, she does. I think she likes it spicier than
spicy.
I do, though.
Now, these are fresh jalapenos that you add or the canned type?
No, fresh.
The fresh jalapenos. Okay, the dressing is quarter of a cup of sugar, quarter of a cup of vinegar, quarter of a cup of olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
And I use cider vinegar, too.
Cider vinegar. Very important. I think balsamic vinegar would kind of blow this away. That would be a little bit too much. So, okay, let's make the recipe.
Sounds good.
Oh, it's delicious. In a bowl, combine the pinto and black beans, corn, pepper, celery, onion, pimentos, and jalapenos. Then, in a separate microwave-safe bowl, heat the sugar and vinegar, short increments, and then you stir it until the sugar is dissolved. You could probably do this on the stove, too, but either one of the places. Let it cool and then add the oil in. Mix as you add. Pour it over the bean mixture and serve with baked tortilla chips. I think that's the key. Serve it with something that's low fat, not the high fat typical chip that you would use. It's a fabulous recipe. I highly recommend it. It's great this summer.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much. It's a great recipe. It's low fat. It's low calorie, 156 calories per person, only 5 grams of fat. It's heart healthy. I think it's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And for sending us this winning recipe, Mary gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And for today's recipe, send a stamped, self-addressed, business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
And if you want this recipe to go, just go to our website. You can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's at zorbapastor.org.
Our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hey, how are you doing, guys?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I have a 5-month-old baby at home, and we are using formula at the moment, and we're just using tap water. And a friend of ours who had a baby 5 weeks prior, they've been using purified water because they say there are a lot of concerns with fluoridated water, and they say it's a big thing in Europe, especially that they've outlawed it, and there are studies that show that it's harmful. And I was just curious if you knew of any studies that spoke to the issue and kind of settled it for me.
Interesting. I remember years ago there were a lot of concerns about fluoride and fluoride in water, but I haven't heard that concern coming up lately. Zora?
Well, the concern is since fluoride was put into the water supply, people have been complaining, and the anti-fluoride lobby has been quite busy. When you look at the number of dental schools that closed in the country as a result of fluoridation because there were so many fewer cavities, you see what the issue is. Fluoride is great. It's awesome in the right amount. It stops cavities from happening. It makes your teeth stronger, and it's great to use. Now, there are anti-fluoride people who say it's taken off the market in Europe. It's not. European water, for the most part, is fluoridated. Just like in the U.S., there are local areas that fluoridate the water and local areas that do not fluoridate mm-hmm. their water. But fluoride helps keep the teeth strong in a growing baby and keeps them from having cavities. So the data, to me, is irrefutable that fluoride is extremely beneficial. And when you look at people who have tooth problems, adults who have tooth problems now, versus the 30-year-olds, 20 and 30-year-olds who grow up, you say, you know, a lot of adults I know of, and they have bridge work and crown work, and what happens is the children that were born basically since about the 60s when fluoride became ubiquitous pretty much in this country, they don't have the same problems. And that's why fluoride was put into toothpaste. You know, most toothpaste contains fluoride. It's even hard to find a toothpaste that doesn't, because it cuts down on calories.
But now you added a little qualifier there, in the right amount. What is the right amount?
Well, the right amount, there's a certain amount per 100,000 that they put in, parts per million, that they put into the water. The issue is that there are natural areas where fluoride is in water. That's how they found out that fluoride was good for cavities. They're natural. But there are a lot of natural springs or natural areas, aquifers, that have fluoride in them. Those people didn't have calories. That's the initial research. But in large amounts, fluoride can brown the teeth and can give you a stained tooth, so that city water has the proper amount of fluoride in it, but natural water that you may get from a spring or an aquifer may have too much. It's always easy to get that water tested by just calling up your local public health department. So you're concerned. In other words, these people said, oh, it's taken off the market. We're not giving our child fluoride, right?
Yeah, essentially they said there were studies out that showed that it, I don't know, had harmful side effects or could harm.
Well, if you look through the good literature, the scientific literature, and there's a lot on this for fluoride. I mean, it's been going on for 30 years, and basically I would say probably 90% of the municipal water supplies in this country are fluoridated. The data shows that there do not appear to be any side effects from fluoride in the amount that's put in water. But it's just like people get upset with chlorine and others. One of the issues, though, that's now coming up is because bottled water has become a multi-billion-dollar industry, and because people are not using tap water and municipal water, are we going to see a rise in cavities that will occur? Now, the cavities are the issue. If you keep your child away from sugar and candy for the rest of their lives, they won't get cavities. Cavities are a function of sugar and candy. So if you don't fluoridate the water, make sure your child doesn't have anything sweet, and it won't be a problem in this society. That would be hard to do, wouldn't it?
All right, well, I'll let you babysit then.
Well, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys.
We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's see if we can help out a listener from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox who writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba and Tom, I have an unusual reaction to strenuous exercise. When I sweat, I turn red only on the right side of my face, straight down the middle. I sweat more on the right side of my body, and my right arm seems to have more color than my left. I asked the doctor about this once a long time ago, and he gave me some vague answer that I don't remember. People I exercise with have a good laugh when they notice the difference in color on my face. What can you tell me about this?"
Well, it's a syndrome, and I can't remember the name of the syndrome, where you basically have one part of your body that sweats and the other part does not.
Oh, really? So this listener is not alone.
Not alone. It is a syndrome. And this has to do with the sympathetic nervous system and how it's basically activated. The sympathetic is sort of our part of our autonomic nervous system, sympathetic and parasympathetic, and our body is regulated. Our internal functions, our sweating functions, and so on are regulated by this. And basically, one side side is giving you the sweat and the other side's turned off. And once again, it is a syndrome whose name I can't remember, and I'm sure it's going to be emailed to me. And when it is, we definitely will discuss it. It doesn't cause any harm. It's just visually disturbing. Sometimes it's disturbing to the person because one side is sweating and they feel kind of funny. The other side is cool and one side is hot. But once again, it's not harmful and there is no treatment.
And I hope our listener doesn't see what you just said as some vague answer that I don't remember.
Well, that's right. It's a vague syndrome that I can't remember. I guess that's what it is for me.
But at least there was a clear answer to what's going
clear,
on.
Baby.
And there's no health problem.
There's no health problem, and there's no help. There's no health problem, and there's no help.
Even if your lifestyle question is affecting just half of you, we want to hear all of it. Just send us your questions in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some interesting research upcoming, along with our medical myth buster. More of your calls coming up, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before that next call, the World Health Organization has a new test to quickly diagnose drug-resistant forms of tuberculosis.
Right, and MDR, multi-drug-resistant TB, is a biggie. It's a big issue. First of all, TB, kind of think of TB as an old disease,
That used to be a problem.
Yeah, the SANS
not
and
anymore.
Everything like that. Right, not anymore. Well, let me tell you something. TB is still a problem. Now, where is it a problem? It's a problem. There are pockets in this country. Refugees, people who come from other countries, that's a big issue.
Okay.
Half the TB in this country is foreign-born TB, but it's around. And in fact, what money was cut, slashed from TB programs during the Reagan administration, what happened was 5 years later, TB saw a great surge. And if you don't treat TB, it spreads to the rest of society, period. That's what it is. It's not an old disease. It's a new disease. And the leading cause of AIDS in this country, the main infection that kills people with HIV/AIDS is tuberculosis.
Why would that be?
Well, if you have latent TB, you've gotten exposed to it, and you've got HIV, it reduces your body's ability to fight it. And people with HIV/AIDS don't necessarily manifest the same. They don't show mucus. They don't necessarily look as bad, and that's a big issue. So
what about this test?
Well, a lot of TB, most TB, can be treated very effectively for 6 to 9 months of regular medication. But some TB is called MDR, or multi-drug resistant TB, or XRT, severely multi-drug resistant TB. That TB is much harder to treat, and the regular drugs, although they suppress it, do not cure it. And the problem is, you often, when you take TB and you culture it, it can take a while without these special rapid tests. It can take 2 to 3 weeks to get a culture back from TB, but with multi-drug resistant TB, to find out if it's that, it sometimes takes a couple of months for the culture to grow out and say, hey, this TB needs to be treated with other drugs. And you wait 2 months. Well, what happens during that 2 months? You're not treating it. This is a brand new test that will basically cut it from 2 months down to a couple of days.
Well, that's a good thing.
It's a major step forward. And it's a major step forward because we can now begin to treat TB effectively, especially the multi-drug resistant TB, which is much more likely to cause
it. So how do you know whether you need a test or not?
Well, basically what happens is when TB is diagnosed, a culture is made, it's tested against the standard drugs, and the TB will also be tested in this new test to see if it's a drug-resistant TB, and you'll be able to find out. It's been a bottleneck in the system. Now, how does this affect us in America?
Yeah.
Well, it affects us because MDR-TB is a problem. It's a problem especially among immigrants in the inner cities, among people who have TB, people with HIV/AIDS, and this is a major step forward which will allow us to treat it more effectively. A society that has less TB is a society that's healthier for all of us.
800-462-7413, toll-free, to Patch Grove, Wisconsin now. Hi.
Hello there.
How can we help?
Well, I tell you, I have a swimming pool in the backyard, And it seems like over the last couple of summers, every time I open the pool, after I open it, my hands start peeling. It's like I get a bad sunburn the way it peels on the palms of my hands. And it's, you know, it's not really a problem, like it doesn't itch or anything, but it's like dead skin, you know, stubbles on the back of my, or I'm sorry, on my palms, which my wife loves because she loves back rubs, and that kind of adds to the back rub a little bit.
Well, now, wait a minute. What's the process involved in opening the pool?
Well, after I take the winter cover off, I throw in the chemicals. You know, it's like chlorine and shocks and things like that, and it's mainly chlorine is what I use for the pool. It's an above ground. And it seems like as soon as my hands are in contact with this, and I've had the pool for almost 20 years, and I've never had this before about 2 years ago, and all of a sudden my hands started peeling a little, and like I've only had the pool open for about 2 weeks now, and my hands look like I've got the worst sunburn you'd ever, I mean, it's just peeling constantly.
Right. You are basically, you've developed a contact sensitivity to the chemicals that are in the pool.
Oh.
The chlorine, maybe the algicide, maybe any of the other things that were thrown into the pool, and you have developed a contact sensitivity to that. And basically, the answer is rubber gloves. That's what
really?
You do. You bet. Very simple, easy. I have developed not contact allergies, but sensitivities, and I wear rubber gloves all the time. That's what I do. It's a simple treatment, and if I don't, my hands become raw and kind of yucky looking. It doesn't sound like my hands are as bad as yours, but wearing those gloves can make a big difference, and that's what you need. If it's bad, a steroid cream such as triamcinolone, which is a topical steroid cream that goes on the surface, can be very useful. But you want to keep yourself away from the chemicals, and rubber gloves are really the answer.
Okay, well, thank you. That'll help, I hope, quite a bit.
And the warm weather will help whenever you're going swimming, so thanks.
Oh.
Thanks for your call.
Okay, and thank you. Bye.
We appreciate it. I still don't quite get this. You put stuff in the pool. It isn't on your hands. It's in a container. Why would your hands
What happens is when you're working on a pool, you're splashing around, you're putting stuff in the pool, it's going in there, you're always doing stuff. I have a pool. I know what happens. You're doing stuff, you're moving around, you're taking off the cover, you've got organic material there, and you've got chemicals that are basically sitting around in the pool and on the surface and on the plastic and so on. And these chemicals, for some people, develop. It can be a significant allergy that they've actually developed. So
I get it. Let's move from the pool now, Zorba, to the hot tub and get to our medical MythBuster. Today's myth comes to us from Bert in Decatur, Illinois. Bert writes, my 12-year-old nephew was recently visiting from South Carolina. My brother was hesitant to let him soak in our wood-fired hot tub, temperature less than 103, because, in quotes, it can harm the boy's developing gonads. Now, this sounds nuts to me, no pun intended. Are there any facts behind this concern?
It sounds nuts to me. Of course it's a pun. How can you avoid that as a pun? It's definitely part of it. But it doesn't hurt a growing boy's gonads. In other words, the testicles are not effective. That's a myth. However, infertility caused by hot tubs, that is not a myth. That is absolutely turns out to be the case. Our gonads hang down below our, if you're a guy, hang down in a separate little sac because they have to be cooler in order to produce more sperm. And when they're at room temperature, well, not room temperature, body temperature, rather, they don't produce sperm in nearly the same robustness. So one of the things we do for infertility, if guys are wearing jockey shorts, as we say, you got to wear boxer shorts. Let them hang low and they'll be better. Well, hot tubs are a very interesting issue. Men who sit in hot tubs for 20 to 30 minutes, soak in hot tubs, have a lower sperm count and have more infertility than men who do not. But it reverses as soon as you stop sitting in the hot tub. But sometimes it takes up to 2 to 3 to 4 months to actually reverse that. And the difference is not a small amount. If, in one study, when they took guys and they had them produce a specimen. Mm-hmm. That's the medical
term
for sampling, taking a sample of the sperm and semen of a male.
Yeah.
They produce a specimen after they've been in a hot tub, and then they don't go in hot tubs for a couple of months. The difference is 400 to 500% difference. So hot tubs definitely cause infertility, but it's not long-term, and it's not going to affect a kid who's growing up.
Okay, so bottom line here, if you're trying to conceive, if you're a guy, stay out of the hot tub.
If you can't conceive. I mean, a lot of guys have plenty of sperm. Doesn't make a difference. They can get in their hot tub.
But if you're a kid, no concern about permanent damage.
Oh, there is no permanent damage. And on the whole, we should not be encouraging our young children to conceive at a young age.
Well, if you're interested in having Zorba bust your myth, send it along in an email to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, toll free. To Boise, Idaho now. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
Well, I'm experiencing adrenal fatigue, and my doctor is an MD and practices also homeopathic medicine, has given me an assessment through blood test to determine that, but she has me taking DHEA supplements, and I take them twice a day, 5 milligrams twice a day. And anyway, what I'm wondering is that the right treatment? Is there more I can be doing? I wanted to explore this topic with you because of it's a problem.
What is this adrenal fatigue? You know, scientifically, we can measure cortisol levels to see whether or not the adrenal gland is actually producing cortisol. And if it's not, which is a natural steroid, it's a big issue. It's Addison's disease, and it's not a minor issue. But adrenal fatigue, I don't really know what that is. What kind of symptoms do you have?
Well, energy lags. Mm-hmm. During the school year, I teach and work a second job.
Uh-huh. So you're working full-time as a teacher.
Yes, and I teach, so I 11-hour days, essentially, during the school year. And so I have extreme energy lags.
Yeah. Why are you working two jobs?
Well, I'm also a school psychologist, so I work in a clinical setting for a neuropsychologist, and I love that.
And
so
you love that. And you get
I have another couple of years before I can retire from teaching and just do that part-time.
Uh-huh. And how many hours of sleep do you get?
I sleep pretty well, maybe 6 or 7 hours a night.
So you get 5 or 6 hours, or 6 or 7. So we'll say six hours
seven.
Of sleep.
Yeah.
Well, there are a couple of issues here. First of all, I don't know if you have adrenal. I don't know what adrenal fatigue is. Mm-hmm. I know what Addison's disease is, which is a significant problem, and the supplement. You know, it's interesting. You'll see whether or not it works. Sometimes people take a supplement and it works and it helps them. And we don't have the science behind it. You know, might be there or might not. And this is more of a homeopathic. The adrenal fatigue is really a homeopathic diagnosis more than a standard medical diagnosis. The concern that I have, a lot of people have two jobs in America. I mean, that's not uncommon at all. In fact, it's about 20% of the working population do other things. I basically do lots of different things. I have several jobs, so I relate to that. The issue, I think, for you is one of sleep. I think that's the issue. The issue is sleep and downtime. So here it is. You're working at two jobs. If you're getting 6 hours of sleep, you may need seven. If you're getting 7 hours of sleep, you may need eight. So that's it. And the other issue is, when can you shut off? That's a problem, because we go back and, you know, we've got our work that we have to do from school, and you may have your work from neuropsych. And sometimes it's very hard to find a point at which we say, I'm finished, because we can now take our work home and work on the computer. Used to be we could only do it in the office, and that ain't the way it is right now. So
right.
I think you ought to identify sleep and increase it by 1 hour a day. That's your goal. See whether or not that's it. And then, where do I find my downtime as a person? Because I have two jobs. One job I like more than the other, but I need the other job for the bennies, and I'm going to keep it up for a while. And I think that's the way to look at it. I don't think DHEA is your answer. I think it's a behavioral issue, a lifestyle issue. And I think ultimately that's where your answer should be. And you can solve this. You just have to figure out where to put your energy.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank a pleasure. You. A
we,
pleasure.
We appreciate the call. And Zorba, before we get out of here, we have a little treat from one of our more musically talented listeners, Peter Leidy. Now, Peter sent us a package containing what he calls the soon-to-be Billboard-topping song called On Your Health. So we're going to have our technical director, Brad Kohlberg, try not to electrocute us as he cues that up for us. Here is On Your Health by Peter Leidy.
On Your Health with Zorba Pastor is everyone's favorite show. You can hear it every week on public radio. Do you have a health question or a remedy you've tried? Zorba's here in the studio with Tom Clark by his side. Maybe you have leg cramps or feel like you could faint. Zorba is a medical doctor. Tom Clark ain't. Do you want to know about folic acid or using a neti pot? Call Zorba. He's a doctor. But remember, Tom is not. Do you have a new wart? Or need a recipe for blueberry tort? Did you twist your ankle playing frisbee resulting in a limp? Do you have a hankering for Red's mango shrimp? Need to talk about that pain in your lower back? Are you concerned that your spouse is smoking too much crack? Zorba likes to cook, and he wrote a book, The Longevity Code. How's your lymph node? Do you have a question about a new mysterious rash? Do you wonder if you're overeating corned beef hash? On Your Health is the way to get all your information. There aren't too many radio shows where you can talk about constipation. Call Zorba today. Find a healthier way. Call Zorba today.
Great. I love it. What a great thing. We've got to send him a book. We've got to send him a cookbook. And how sweet it is.
See you next week, Zorba.
I'll be here.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
Don't forget you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Charles Monroe Kane is our executive producer. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0712Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.